This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Have a listen to this.
Interest rates are higher. I know people don't like that, but you should be welcoming a stronger economy.
And maybe Neil has a point about the machinery of capitalism being oiled with the blood of the workers.
The United States is a country that has always paid all of its bills.
Lannister always pays his debts.
Don't let the bastards get you.
Hello and welcome to Comedian versus Economist. We demystify the world of money and help you get a handle on the bigger picture. My name's Adam, and we're joined as always by my little older brother and real life economist, Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
Yeah, g'day, Adam. How are you going?
Doing very well, thank you. We do love ratings and reviews on this show, of course. So perhaps while you're listening to the podcast today, maybe go and leave us a cheeky little review. That would be much appreciated. But we do have a massive show coming up. Power bills are set to moon. That's not a cool name for the latest cryptocurrency, although, Thomas, if you think about it, power bills is a great name for a cryptocurrency. Power bills. Sadly, no, just a good old-fashioned power price increase. And forget working from home. It's time to start homing from work as New York starts converting office space into apartments. And maybe we won't have to work at all, though, because we've got more robots coming for your jobs. These are actual robots, though, not just a glorified chatbot. But first, Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, now Credit Suisse, banks crashing all around us. Did someone say KFC? Sorry, GFC. Did someone say GFC, Thomas?
Yeah, it's going on in the banking sector. But, you know, I feel like regulators assure us that it's all fine. And I'm reminded of that meme of the dog sitting in a burning building going, this is fine.
Regulators reminds me of that, when was it, the 90s show? That 90s song, sorry. You know, Regulators.
Ah, Regulators.
With Nate G.
No,
Nate Dogg and Warren G. And I'm not a rapper, so.
Good segue.
Yeah. Anyway, what's Nate Dogg up to?
Yeah. Well, maybe he's moving his money out of Credit Suisse. Probably not. I don't think he's probably doesn't have anything to do with Credit Suisse. Yeah, but more banking chaos. So yeah, so SVB got the full bailout last weekend, and then midweek Credit Suisse nosedived. So its shares fell 30% at one stage, got a trading halt.
Credit Suisse is a pretty big bank, no? Isn't it? That's one of the big ones.
Massive.
So we've moved on from the little SVBs and Signature Banks, and now we're like big end of town.
It is big, but I think it's like a quarter of the size of NAB still. So, like, it's big in terms of, like, as an investment bank, it's big. Mm. And I don't think Credit Suisse has a lot of, like, retail depositors. I think they're more of your uptown kind of bank.
Right.
Everyone's heard of them, and it's a big name, and it's bigger than, you know, no one had heard of SVB. So, yeah, it's a big story. I mean, the weird thing about it is you look at this and think, like, oh, yeah, banking collapse. This is the collapse of the financial sector we've been worried about for 12 years or whatever.
Yeah.
But what happened to Credit Suisse has nothing to do with what happened to SVB.
Rubbish. Really?
Practically
it's
nothing.
Just coincidence. Three banks all crashed at the same time. Unrelated incidences that happened at different banks.
No, that's the reality. No, like, I mean, what happened at Signature Bank and SVB was pretty much the same. SVB had an over-concentration in the tech sector and then a mismatch in their liabilities because they'd gone long treasuries. And so they couldn't handle a run. Same story. story at Signature Bank. Credit Suisse doesn't have any of that issue. They don't have an over-reliance on one sector. They don't have a liability mismatch on their books. What they did have, they had to file a report in the US. Well, no, the US Securities and Exchange Commission announced that they were looking into it, and they had to delay the publication by a week. And everyone's like, ooh, that's a bit odd. And then they came out and announced that they had found material weaknesses in their financial reporting processes for 2021 and 2022.
Ah.
Didn't say what those material weaknesses were, but everyone heard that and went, ooh, that's not good.
Right.
And it happened just as SVB Bank and all of that's collapsing. And I don't know if you caught this other story about First Republic, but First Republic got into trouble the same way Signature Bank was in trouble. And then all the big banks in America got together and then said, we're just going to put heaps of money into Signature Bank, into First Republic Bank. Because what had happened is you had this flight from the smaller regional lenders, which everyone was worried about, and a flight to safety. So, okay, we're pulling out of First Republic Bank and we're going to dump it in JP Morgan. And so this dynamic's going on. And so then...
Hang on, JP Morgan then said, we can't let that happen. We don't want more customers. We need to give First Republic Bank some money.
Yeah, yeah. This is what the regulators in America coordinated. All that they said to JP Morgan, all that money that's coming to you from the small banks, can you just put it back?
Right.
And they're like, all right.
Why did they agree to that?
I think because the alternative is the collapse of the financial sector.
That's a good carrot, I suppose.
Yeah, which, you know, probably wouldn't have been good for profits of a bank. Financial analysis right. there, but probably.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's going on. So all that's going on. So the whole financial sector is looking like pretty wobbly, pretty weird. Treasury yields are all over the shop. Like the bond market had tanked massively and then bounced back, and you know, just unprecedented moves in the bond market. So it seems like it's like this. It's a pivotal moment. It feels like one of these moments where it could go either way. Everyone's a bit tetchy, and then Credit Suisse comes out and says, yeah, we've got material weaknesses in our financial reporting processes. And then, their biggest shareholder is the Saudi National Bank.
Yeah, I saw that. I don't understand why the Saudi National Bank is the biggest shareholder of Credit Suisse.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's just how world of finance works. But the head of the Saudi.
I like how you're like, that's just how the world of finance works, is like the equivalent of saying, yeah, that's because you don't understand most things. But it's such a nicer way of putting it. That's just how the world of finance works, Adam.
Right. Some things beyond the pale of your understanding. No, but the head of the Saudi National Bank comes out and says, just want to announce we're not going to give Credit Suisse any more money because we have reached our cap. So like once there's like thresholds, like I don't know what it is, but like if you own more than 10% of the company, then you need to like report together or something like this. It becomes a different story.
Yeah.
And they held as much as they were willing to hold. And so he comes out and goes, yeah, just want to let everyone know we're not going to give Credit Suisse any more money. Everyone's like, does Credit Suisse need more money? What?
the champagne timing. Like, just. That is, you can't. Like, I've seen a lot of performance, you know, comedy plays, whatever. You can't buy timing. That is amazing.
Yeah.
I've read the report. Just as an FYI, nothing totally unrelated. We're not giving them any more money.
Yeah.
Mic drop.
Yeah. So markets freaked. Shares crashed 30% at some point. Trading went into the stock went into a trading halt. European banks across the board smashed like 10%. UBS down 7%. So then the Swiss regulators stepped in and said like, no, they're good, eh? They're all right. They're fine. They don't have any liquidity problems. Everyone's like, yeah. And then Credit Suisse went and says we're taking decisive action and we're tapping a $54 billion loan facility from the Swiss Central Bank there's nothing wrong, but we are going to tap $54 billion from the Swiss Central Bank.
It's standard practice. We do this every Wednesday. It's every second Wednesday of the month, we just ask for $54 billion from the US. It's what we do. Again, unrelated to everything else that's going on.
In some ways, it's just bad timing. And the funny thing is, like, I'm reading this, like, poor Credit Suisse. Like, they just got caught up in the chaos. There's nothing of their own fault. But then you look into, you know, people saying, oh, Credit Suisse has been on people's watch list for a while because their profitability is down. Their costs are up and their margins are weak. And they got a criminal conviction for allowing drug dealers to launder money in Bulgaria.
They got entangled in
a corruption case in Mozambique and got involved in a spying scandal and had a massive leak of client data. And
right.
Okay.
Well, no wonder their regulatory report was late. Like,
I've been busy.
Got a bit going on. We've got criminal trials, lawsuits. We can't be filing accurate reports on time. Like, cut us some slack. We've got to prioritise. We've got finite resources here at Credit Suisse. We can't be submitting regulatory reports where we've got bigger fish to fry. So sorry it was late. Sorry it wasn't as accurate as you'd like it to be, but we've got a bit going on.
Just feeling like the emails from the Securities and Exchange Commission just putting us under a bit of pressure.
Yeah, a bit naggy.
So all that's going on. And then Bank of England's in emergency talks for some reason.
Right.
I think the thing about Credit Suisse is that goes everywhere. SVB is isolated to Silicon Valley. Credit Suisse is like global. Bank of England's in emergency talks. And then the Aussie bond market, I think I might have reversed now, but it went from pricing rate hikes to pricing rate cuts. Okay, wheels are coming off the financial system. Rate hikes are off the table. We're back to rate cuts.
Wow.
Yeah, but I mean, bond market's all over the shop. So by the time this comes out, that could have changed.
And in fact, the Credit Suisse thing's changed too, hasn't it? The Credit Suisse, like I saw this morning. So we're recording on Friday, by the way. This is Friday the 17th of March. The Credit Suisse I saw this morning, their share price is back up 30%. Is that because everyone gave them money?
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone took a look at their actual balance sheet and went like, it's okay.
Right.
It's not great in the sense of their profitability. Like their profitability is still hurting and their market cap is well down on where it was in 2021. So it's a business with some problems, but it's not a bank at the brink of collapse. You know, like it was a market overreaction to, you know, just with the timing of everything. It was unfortunate timing.
Right. Okay.
And the ECB, interestingly, looked through all this and went like, Christine Lagarde, who's in our intro, actually, she looked through it and went like, "Yeah, we're hiking rates. We're not going to let this stop us from hiking rates."
Good on you, Christine. Mm. I heard someone this morning say that with all the money that's flowing into Credit Suisse at the moment, they're actually going to rename themselves Debit Suisse. Okay, Thomas, what's happening with electricity prices?
Yeah, well, they're going up, much we know. So we got the draft default offers released by the Australian Energy Regulator. Hmm. So we talked about this a little bit last year, but the way the energy market works is the regulator controls retail prices through the default market offer, which is sort of like a benchmark rate for everyone in the system.
Okay.
And so it sort of released this draft determination on what should happen to those. And prices going up, no surprise there. So New South Wales, South Australia and parts of Queensland looking at around 23.7% increase in electricity prices. So pretty, substantial.
Interesting we're talking about. I actually had a solar system installed today.
Mm.
And the guy said, he's like, perfect timing, really, to get a solar system installed because with prices going up, he said your return on investment is actually the end of the weekend. So I'm like, amazing. I should save enough by Tuesday to have paid off the solar system. So 23% in South Australia. So that's like, I would not normally ever be happy about power prices rising, but as a new solar system owner, I'm like, great. Mm.
I think
how much I'll say.
Oh, no, I mean, it's definitely changed the economics. I mean, we got our solar system about 2 years ago, and I reckon the return was like break-even return was like 6 years or something. But it's that was all before COVID. After COVID, but before the energy market blew up. So, that's got to be down. So, yeah.
I mean, I get nothing to feed back in. Like, I'm getting like 5 cents or something feeding back into the grid. But
still, I think it's stacking up. Hmm.
And I'm running a heater, and it's 27 degrees outside. So just because I can, I'm sweating bullets in here.
So we're 23.7% New South Wales, South Australia, but 31% in Victoria. 31.1%. So that's pretty hefty. And that comes across because we also had double digit increases last year. We got 18% New South Wales, 12% Queensland. So on the way up. So yeah, pretty chunky. So that's a draft that'll get finalized in May and then come into effect in the new financial year. So when we can expect that to land.
Did the government have some price caps?
Yeah, they did. They brought in price caps.
What happened to them?
Well, no, they're in place. So that's at the generator level. And it seems to be working. Like it has to have brought down prices. Miss Claire Savage from who's the head of the AER. Yeah, she said that had worked. At one stage, the AER had predicted a default market offer of a rise of between 35% and 50%. She says, but since October, the price of those four contracts has fallen 50% in some regions, and that's definitely put a significant reduction in the amount of price increases we'd be expecting to make. So, yeah, so it worked. Good job.
Okay, that's good. But generally then this is bad news for households. So obviously people are going to have to pay more money.
Yeah, it is bad. It's hard for households who've got to come up with that extra cash flow. It also there's these two time bombs sitting in the inflation data, which is the other interesting thing about this. So this 31% increase in Victoria, that happens in July 1st. So that kicks over in Q3 of this year. That means that's going to be showing up in the inflation data, in the annual inflation data, all the way through to Q3 24. That big jump in power prices. Does that make sense? So our headline inflation, that's going to, a 31% increase in electricity prices will feed through into headline inflation, and that's going to stay in the inflation data until Q3 2024.
Surely, you're going to tell me surely that the RBA is across this though, and that they're going to factor it in, that they're not going to be looking at the inflation data in August and going, whew, still pretty high. We're going to have to keep pumping the rates up.
They've got to anchor expectations and they've got to meet the reality. And so they've got to do whatever it takes.
Anchor expectations. That's just fancy economist talk for we're putting prices up and everything's going to get harder.
Yeah. But if inflation's running at, continues to run at 5-6% because of power prices and people expect inflation to run at 5-6%, that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy outside of the electricity prices, and inflation sticks around for longer.
Right.
So the RBA has to meet the inflation data where it's at. And electricity prices will go into, it'll be part of the mix.
Won't increased electricity prices have the same impact on spending and jobs and other things as raising rates? Like, isn't the reason that we're raising rates to try and cut inflation? So we want to raise rates, reduce people's spending, reduce people's kind of disposable income. Wouldn't raising electricity prices have the same effect? Therefore, if we do both, we're really smashing everybody?
Yeah. I mean, directionally it would. Whether it's one for one is hard to know. And definitely the RBA will be like, looking at the balance of the economy and looking what's going on. And, if consumers are really getting smashed, they're not going to keep hiking rates. But if the consumers hold out and they do okay and unemployment doesn't rise, this inflation could, that's sticky inflation. So it's what, we're talking about, shifting, having sticky inflation. This is a bit of a problem. The other problem is rents. So we know, on CoreLogic data, rents are running at 11%. Rents in the inflation data are 4%. And the difference is that CoreLogic is measuring new rental contracts, where the ABS is measuring the stock of rental prices.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
No.
So it's like...
But I'll try listening this time.
They talk about it like a bathtub and
there
the new rental contracts. Yeah.
Yeah, you're speaking my language. Put it into things bath I can them. Understand. Yeah. I know what a bath is.
Yeah, so new rental contracts are the water flowing into the bath.
Yeah.
And if they're running at 10% higher, that's filling the bath with a temperature that's 10% higher. But the existing bath is the total market, regardless of when rents were agreed on. So they'll be in the bath of the total pool of rental agreements. There'll be rental agreements that are 4, 5, 6 years old.
Mm.
You know, rental prices are going up on new contracts when new contracts are made, but that doesn't mean the existing contracts are going up. But they will in time once they roll over. And so that's why, you know, we're running at 11% now, but ABS says it's like 4%. But once all that new flow coming in heats up the pool, heats up the bath,
yeah,
then we're going to have 10% rental inflation in the ABS data. But it's not going to happen for another year, 2 years.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So, like, we've got these two time bombs now with electricity prices and rents, both fairly substantial in the inflation data, that are going to stick around for quite a long time just on the nature of the way the data works.
Right. And that's going to happen regardless of what we do with rates then? So... aren't we?
Yeah,
we're raising rates to try and curb inflation. So shouldn't we just stop raising? This is back to my other point. Shouldn't we just stop raising rates? If, like, we're kind of saying, well, we know inflation's going to like get sticky and it's going to stay around, and there's nothing we can do about it. So how about we don't raise rates while the inflation's, you know, immovable, and we'll just kind of just deal with it until that all works itself out, and then we'll reassess where we're at. Like, it seems pretty cruel to be raising rates while there's this immovable inflation. If the rationale for raising rates is to get inflation down, but we know we can't move it with rates, then what are we doing? We're banging our head against the wall.
Yeah. I mean, it is one of the why monetary policy is a blunt instrument. You know, like if you imagine there's two sectors in the economy, and one's running really hot, and that's pulling the inflation data up, but the RBA can't touch it. The RBA, on its mandate, has to go after the other sector of the economy and smash it in order to bring the average down. Do you know what I mean? That's its mandate.
This whole system's broken. Let's just get used to having 6% inflation. Well, how about that? Why don't we just do that? That seems like a far easier thing to kind of digest if we just go, why don't we just say 6%'s okay?
Yeah, you can't shift the inflation target every time it's uncomfortable. Like,
that's exactly what politicians do all the time. They're like, well, we're going to have to review the policy.
Yeah, and that's where they took it out of the hands of the politicians.
Well, we had a policy, but the policy just started to really drift away from the reality. So now we've formed a crack squad, and we're going to review the policy, see if we can bring it into line with reality.
It's not how the financial world operates.
All right, let's take a break here. We'll grab a word from this week's sponsor and be back with more Comedian versus Economist right after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, Thomas, we're talking about a new property project in New York City. What is it?
Yeah, it's an office conversion. So office has been converted to a bunch of apartments, basically. So they've taken this sort of heritage-listed Art Deco building, which was first built in 1931. And they've done a whole bunch of renovations on it, like massive renovations, lots of plush amenities, marble kitchens and baths, herringbone floors, apparently.
La la.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and then the first residents are moving in this month.
Rich residents, I'm guessing.
Rich residents. Yeah, well, the address is 1 Wall Street.
Ah.
So it's like the first street on when you get to Wall Street. And the developer, Harry Macklow, said it was a landmark. It was the threshold of the financial district.
Right.
It was really walking right into the home of capitalism.
Yeah, wow.
Which, you know, I think that's going to speak to a particular demographic. I don't think that many people are like, I want to live in the home of capitalism.
I was going to say, who wants to live in the financial district? Like, of all the places in New York that you could live in, there's, you know, beautiful park views and all sorts, and you're going to choose to live in the financial district. And the last thing the financial district needs is bloody outsiders coming in. You know, people who didn't grow up in the financial district moving in, start complaining about the noise from the regular Thursday night live spreadsheet competitions going on at the milk bar. Get your formulas down. Some of us are trying to sleep.
Yeah. Just classic. They move in because they like the vibe.
I know. They want to be all financial. And then they get there and they complain the economists are staying up too late. I think I'm actually on record, maybe on this podcast, as saying we should. Like when COVID kicked off and all of the buildings in the city started being evacuated, evacuated, basically going unused because everyone was told you need to social distance and stay at home and you can't move about. I think I actually said that we should convert them into living spaces. Mm. I was more thinking of homeless people having a roof over their head, I don't think this is what the goal is here. I think this is to better service really rich people. Still, it's nice to see someone do it. could have had a better social outcome, but yeah, you take your little wins.
Yeah, I mean, it's an idea that's been floated around for a while. Mm. Like there's sort of the macro factors that are driving it. One is the epic housing shortage. 2 is that low office occupancy. And office occupancy hasn't bounced back to pre-COVID levels yet.
Mm.
And it does look like we're sort of moving towards more of a hybrid work story, which has less demand for office.
Yeah.
Yeah, footprint, less space. So that is freeing up some office space, which, you know, does look like a long-term trend, you know, at the moment.
Well,
so
I hope so, because they've spent a lot of money converting this office into... Because as far as I know, they ripped out pretty much the entire inside of the building. So if they're like, you know what, turned out working from home was a fad. We really need that. Yeah. We're going to need to move these people out. That'd be ironic if the really rich people who moved in ended up homeless because they got booted out of the office dwellings because... We misjudged how long people would stay away from the city.
Yeah, but yeah, so it could happen here because you've got the same two macro factors, the housing shortage and that low office occupancy. It's interesting, like you're saying, like there's the two big barriers to this. One is the perception of living in the CBD, that the CBD doesn't have a fun vibe, you know, being a financial district.
Obviously haven't been to the financial district. It's going off.
Yeah, but the other thing is the expense. So one thing I learned from this article is that it's really expensive to convert offices to residential because offices are designed, like all the plumbing, all the electricity, everything is designed for an office and it's a very different kit out.
Yeah.
And what Harry Macklow is saying is he had to completely gut the building, all the plumbing, electrics, elevators, stairs, everything, it all came out until only the shell remained.
Right.
And then he started again. So I think office conversion sounds like a neat idea. It's like, we'll just put a few beds in the corners and call it a house. But it's actually a much bigger story than that. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. Like, yeah, it's an idea that's been floating around for a while but hasn't really taken off.
I think the communal kitchen and the cafe area, that's always... I think if I look around my office, I think that's the biggest barrier to me wanting to live there. It's Simon from the infrastructure team just walking in at any time, grabbing an instant coffee.
These little notes. Can whoever left their champagne glasses in the kitchen?
Yeah, passive aggressive. Please clean up after yourselves.
Yeah. Have a little respect.
Not all of us want to pick up your rubbish. Yeah, a bit of that sort of gear.
I had some caviar in the fridge and it was clearly labelled.
All right, Thomas, Finally, you've been yelling at clouds about robots taking our jobs for most of this year. Any update on that?
Oh, it's coming.
Right.
It's coming.
Still,
we should
still
be
angry.
Yep. I mean, no, lots of opportunities, lots of excitement, but potentially a massive job apocalypse on the way very quickly. The thing that caught my attention was there was a test of an AI robot in Mark's Apparel.
Oh, yeah.
Is a store in Canada, Vancouver, Canada. Mm. Mark's Apparel, yeah, retail clothes and stuff.
I think they do work. They do workwear, I think.
Oh, do they?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
They're owned by a tire company, a Canadian tire company.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Mm. The way the world of finance works. Yeah, but they did a trial, robot trial, and it did good.
Right.
It did good. Yeah, it had a week-long pilot test. It had a human looking over its shoulder, but it did well. They were happy with the results.
I think it not only had a human looking over its shoulder, it also had a pilot. Like, it had someone, like an engineer or someone, who was driving the robot.
Is that right? I thought it was autonomous.
I think so. Oh, maybe it was.
Yeah, I thought, because it's AI driven, so I think it's...
I guess that would make sense.
I think
if someone's in there with a joystick controlling it.
Yeah.
The gig's up.
Yeah.
What do you think of our new autonomous robot? This is someone reminds me of a comic I once saw. Someone was like, this is the latest ultra portable laptop. And then it was like a cable that ran to the other side of the wall where there was an enormous battery. Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So it did good.
It did good. But the thing that blew me away is that it did 110 different retail related activities in the front and the back of the store. Included picking and packing merchandise, sales floor replenishment, cleaning, tagging, labeling, store display compliance, and folding.
Folding?
Yeah. So 110, like that's not, you know, like one robot doing one thing. Like I get it. But 110 different tasks, that's pretty wow for me.
But some of those tasks might be like picked up a pen, didn't know what to do with it. Put it back down.
Down.
And it doesn't say how long it took it either. I don't know.
Had a chat to Louisa from accounts.
Bit of water cooler banter. Yeah. Task number 37, tick. Talked to Stuart about the footy. 57, tick. It also didn't say how quickly it was able to do these things, did it?
Well, doesn't matter.
Well, it kind of does.
No, because you're not paying it by the hour.
But you still need stuff.
As long as it's a reasonable time frame, like 4 hours to fold one shirt.
I'm going to find the video. There's a video from the company that made this robot. Have you seen the video of the robot with the Ziploc bag?
Ziploc bag, yeah.
And its job was to open the Ziploc bag, take some different coloured ping pong balls, put them in the bag and then zip it up again. It literally took this is a 4.5 minute video of this robot putting ping pong balls in. It would take a human like literally 5 seconds. So I think needs to be considered here.
I think so, but it's also like you got to remember we're on an exponential curve here and like, you know, if it's 4.5 minutes now, in 5 years, it's 5 seconds, right? Mm. Like, if it's done the task, that's the breakthrough. I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's kind of like the big challenge is getting the robot to think like a human and do the problem solving. Mm. But the other big challenge they talked about with this is hands and mimicking hands and saying that 98% of all human work requires the dexterity of the hand. Mm. And that has been a massive challenge because human hands are just this marvel of engineering.
Mm.
But they're cracking that nut. And 110 different retail tasks from one robot, that's pretty impressive. I mean, how many tasks are there in a retail store? Like, can't be that much more than 110.
Yeah, and even the hand story, like you have to think, like the store at the moment is set up for hands. Like it's set up for people with hands. And so if you get the robot kind of doing 80% of the work, and then there's like 20% of tasks just need hands, then maybe you're at the point where most of the work can be done by a robot and you go, you know what, why don't we just refactor the store to not need hands anymore? Like, you know, if you look at Amazon's factories or Amazon's whatever, the robots flying all over the place and picking things off shelves, they're all designed they don't rely on hands.
So I
think maybe we'd just reach a tipping point and we go, you know what, hands just old school. It's more for your small smaller stores where we still use hands. Because at some point, as you say, if you can do 110 retail tasks, then I don't know. I mean, the cost has got to be a barrier too. Like, I don't know, what does a robot cost? Well, I'm guessing millions of dollars still.
For now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. Like, everyone, you look at it, it's easy to mock robots doing a slow job, not doing a great job. But it's like, that's now. It's like, you look at where the how the iPhone evolved over 10 years. We're looking at something probably quicker than that with this stuff. So,
well, it'd have to be, because it'd be very difficult to performance manage a robot too. Like, if it wasn't working and you needed to be like, look, mate, you're just not getting the balls in the bag as quick as we need you to do it. Like, I'm sorry. Yeah. We're going to have a talk. Are you even listening to what I'm saying? The other risk you've got too, of course, is you can't, they're only suited to some industries. You couldn't have a robot working in an electronics store. The temptation for theft would be far too great. You have your robot worker just start fleecing new parts for itself off the shelf, skimming the crypto till. Like, where does it end? We'll see. Yeah. I guess only time will tell.
The thing I also found funny about this article is how much they were trying to spin, really go out of the way to say this wasn't coming for jobs.
Right.
So Geordie Rose, who's the co-founder of Sanctuary AI, said that the robot performed many necessary but rudimentary tasks that people note finding unsatisfying or unfavourable.
That's work,
right? Like, jobs is literally a list of tasks that are unsatisfying and unfavourable.
Here's a list of things you probably don't want to do. Do you want to do them? No. All right, what if I pay you? Okay, I'll do them if you pay me. This is the foundations of work.
Yeah.
And we got to remember too, back in the early days of cigarettes, you know, there was a time when I think some people were trying to say cigarettes were actually good for you. You know, like, I think we need to be mindful of the lessons of the past and go, well, I don't think we should necessarily just assume that, you know, people who are making the next thing, whether it's cigarettes or robots, have our best interests at heart.
No. I mean, but I find it interesting that there is actually this push. So the AFR also wrote, they wrote a review of ChatGPT-4, version 4 that's just come out.
Pretty amazing.
And they were loving it. But they're saying, if companies continue down this path to automate some of the most time-consuming tasks, white-collar employees will get back the thing they value most. Time.
Oh, yes.
But it's such a stupid statement. Like, you know, like, you imagine your boss walks in and goes, what are you doing just sitting around? Like, oh, I'm just enjoying the time that's freed up because ChatGPT's doing my work now.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not paying you to just sit around. Mm. If your time's freed up, either I'm taking that, I'm paying you less, or I'm getting you to do something else that I'm going to pay you for.
Mm.
It's not freeing up time for office workers. Office workers are not, there's no scenario where office workers are getting more time at the end of the robot revolution.
Yeah.
That's just, but it's just interesting that everyone at the pushing this is really going out of their way to say, oh, it's going to create lots of opportunities. It's not going to kill jobs. Like, it patently is. And the biggest hint to that is that people are really trying to tell you that it's not. For sure it is.
This is like when I was in the shaver shop and I was buying a shaver, electric shaver, and the guy was like, you can use it wet or dry, you can use it in the shower, so you can save time. And I thought to myself, I'm like, brilliant, I'll be able to shave in the shower. And of course that'll save time because I'm showering and I'm shaving. But that only works if, like, I was planning to just stand idly in the shower for a period of time. Because I can't be washing my hair while I'm shaving, or I can't be, I mean, you know, take some coordination. I can't be, you know, lathering the soap while I'm shaving. So while I'm shaving, I'm not doing whatever else I might have been doing in the shower. So really, being able to shave in the shower or after the shower has no impact on my time.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lesson in that for all of us.
Yeah. That's exactly what the robot revolution is going to be like.
It's going to be like my shaver. All right, Thomas, we've gone on far too long. I think we better leave it there. We did want to get to a message from Quinton, who sent us a message at CVE Podcast. We won't get to it this week, but it was really interesting. So stick around and I'll give you a reason to tune in next week. We'll definitely get to it then. So that's it from us. Don't forget, FinFest is happening again this year, November the 11th, 2023, at the Carriage Works in Sydney. We hope you can join us there. Great event last year, promises to be an even bigger and better event this year. But for us, that's all for this week. It is bye for now.
You have been listening to an Equity Mates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. Equity Mates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.